You've got to have your business processes in order. If you have bad business processes now and you put an ERP in place, it does not fix your bad business processes.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO, co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's spend without buying an ERP, which is the topic of our conversation today. Some people out there love to rag on ERPs, and I have to admit, I am one of them. There's a famous stat that 75% of ERP implementations don't achieve the business outcomes they were set out with. And of course, I love to sing that to the rooftops because I pride myself as being an alternative. And it could be that you were listening to this and maybe an ERP has tried to kill your business with a messed up implementation. But it doesn't need to be that way, or so our today's guest might say. Kerry Peters from Your New View is going to tell us how she has built a successful fractional CFO business around people's, I'm not going to say their failed implementations, but around making sure that people do not fail with their implementations. Very interesting in Kerry's story is that her heart is in delivering business value, while other people might be interested in just shipping your software and moving on to the next guy. So that's the big point of differentiation. And by having her customers in mind, she's managed to build a very successful practice. So if you're a fractional CFO yourself, you might be interested to stay around to the end to find out how she's built it up. So Kerry, you're very welcome to the show. Love the Irish name there. Can you please introduce yourself by telling us something about you that not many people know?
Oh, gosh. So not many people know that other than talking about ERP software and financial reporting and all that kind of stuff all the time, when I'm not in front of the computer, I'm a beekeeper and I have 5 beehives and I keep myself and my neighbors supplied in honey all year with my funny little hobby. Yeah.
Wow. So precisely 0 out of the 10,000 days or so I've been on this planet, I have woken up in the morning and thought, oh, I would love to have a bunch of insects in my backyard. So how do you get into beekeeping?
My grandfather was a beekeeper. And he actually was an award-winning beekeeper. So I learned a lot from him over the years. And once I had some land of my own, I said, I think I'm going to get some bees of my own. So I'm regularly out there on the weekend with a bee suit on and my smoker going. And it's a lovely, quiet time to just commune with the bees and observe all of their cool communal behavior on how they maintain their encapsulated society in my backyard. They're fascinating little creatures and I learn all kinds of things from them all the time.
Very interesting. Have you ever been stung or is that part of the comes to the territory?
Definitely. Yeah, it's part of the thing. As long as you can get through a day without being stung on the face, you're in good shape.
Wow, you're ready.
Why you wear a veil, right? But I can take a sting on the hand or the arm anytime now. It doesn't even bother me anymore.
Oh my God, you're not really selling the sizzle here. I was almost with you there while you were talking. Now I'm like, no.
Beekeeping is not for everybody. Yeah, it's a little bit of a masochistic kind of hobby, I would say. But the honey is so wonderful. And when you turn it into things like mead and all that kind of stuff, then you have beautiful honey things. In fact, one of my favorite things to make with honey is you take a bunch of honey comb that you've harvested out of the hive and you soak it in whiskey and you let it sit for a couple of weeks. And then you bottle it and it makes the most wonderful thick whiskey to drink in the wintertime.
Okay, you kind of got me back again now. And now I'm interested because that's what do they do that with? We have Irish whiskey over here. You know, we're famous for that. But then the South, you guys have what? You have J.D. Beam or someone? Don't you guys specialize?
There's Jim Beam. There's Jack Daniels. There's Hennessy. So there's lots of good whiskey choices. I like to try different whiskeys now. So I think in my cupboard from this last season, I've got 6 different whiskeys that I infused with this honeycomb. And I always save it for the cold days in the winter when we're in front of the fire because you put a little ice cube in there. And something about the honeycomb and the wax just makes it just entirely different than just putting a little bit of honey in your whiskey. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll let you into a little secret. It has been known that guests of the Gross Profit Podcast receive a bottle of Irish whiskey randomly in the post afterwards. So if you do, I expect to hear how it goes with honey. Sounds like sacrilege on the one hand, but I'm curious on the other hand. So
yeah.
Okay, so tell me, Do you think being a beekeeper has given you, have you learned anything from that you can apply? Because there's the, obviously straight away there's the masochism, like implementing ERPs and being a masochist. That sounds straight off the bat. But right? Is there anything else you've learned that, you know, you apply in your business life from your helping? Oh,
I tell you, there's a direct correlation with having established processes and how your business runs. Bees are very regimented in exactly how they run their schedule and how they do their processes. And they have a very interesting life cycle. Everybody has a certain job for certain days, and everybody knows what job they're going to have next and how to hand off the job before. So if you think about good succession planning and good processes, they just run it naturally. And bees only live for about 45 days. So you think about it, bees have 7 different jobs in about 45 days, and they just know what it is. If businesses could get that organized with how we do things, who knew what we could do with that?
Wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. So I'm thinking of turning off my entire staff every 45 days. But the queen lives, right? She keeps going.
The queen lives for a couple of years, and she's the continuity. Uh-huh. Yep.
Very interesting. Okay. Well, we won't dive into that too much further. I'll get in trouble with my team. So you listen, you don't get to wander onto the Gross Profit Podcast without being pretty hotshot, right? So I'd like you to tell me about your, how you got credentialed and how you rose to the ranks of a fractional CFO. Where did you start off, and how did it start, and how's it going? That's better.
Yeah. So gosh, how did it start? So ages and ages ago, I started out with a degree of biology. And I realized that, I'm sure that links in with the honeybees somewhere. And I realized that I couldn't make enough money and it wasn't interesting enough for me to have a career from. So I went and I got my MBA and started working in accounting because I figured that anybody who knew stuff about finance could do well in business at some point, right? If you had that good foundational base of finance. Eventually, I got my master's of accounting and financial management. So after accumulating a couple of degrees and a whole bunch of work experience, I found that I had worked for 15 years as a corporate controller. So I started as an end user, you know, just running the accounting department for different companies. And then I worked for a Microsoft partner for a while doing implementations. And the thing that I learned from all of that is I really enjoyed business process and training. And my co-founder, Kim, and I founded New View Strategies. And our purpose was to help people to understand how they could do more with the ERP solutions that they'd already purchased. So how could we help them with training? How could we help them with business process improvement to make their implementation of that software more successful? Because we found that so many companies, you know, paid for this implementation, went through this painful process. Some of them were successful, some of them were not, but all of them were severely underutilized, where people were only using, a lot of people say 15, 20% of their software. And we said, that's ridiculous. You have all these capabilities. And if you just knew how, if you had some guidance on how to do better with business process and have some training so that you could retain that information, that you could do better. So that's what we've based our business on. And we've had a blast doing that with helping companies to just improve their processes and do a lot more with their ERP software than they ever thought of in the beginning.
Very good. So I have a note here in our prep that says MBA SM, ask about this. So I better ask about it.
No, it's the 2 master's degrees. So the MBA, everybody knows what MBA is, but the MAFM, nobody ever knows what that is. That's a Master of Accounting and Financial Management. And I got those 2 degrees, I don't know, 10 years apart. I just, I'm a lifelong learner, and I really like to keep current on those skills and learn whatever new things are coming out there. So those have helped me to really stay current. And since then, I've gotten my, I've taken some Microsoft, you know, things as well. So I've passed the MB800, which certifies me to be working with Microsoft Dynamics 365 Business Central. And I just keep learning as I go. And that's one of the benefits. I'm also a Microsoft MVP. There's so many additional opportunities for learning that I have through Microsoft to just continue to hone my skill and make sure that I understand, you know, what's happening with the latest and greatest features of the software. In fact, just yesterday, our company had a big event where we talked about how people could leverage the new release features that just came out in last month. That's always a lot of fun.
Okay. Now, you mentioned something which I want to kind of take a little side path on here, which is that you said that, you know, people buy an ERP, but they don't utilize it all, right? And it reminds me of a conversation I had a customer, one of ours recently, one of my favorite customers, actually. They're a startup. They're doing battery R&D, right? So very cool. They get funded by ARPA and they get, you know, they're basically VC backed and their whole thing is an R&D application. Yeah. And we're having a call, we're planning a year ahead, and they were saying, yeah, we just want to make sure you're happy, or you know, we're going to need this now, you're going to be able to help us. And I was like, yeah, this is great. And I was like, listen, if you don't mind me asking, you seem unreasonably enthusiastic about our purchase order management system. Like, I don't know, people normally aren't that. I'm just curious, like, you guys are doing very well. Shouldn't you like go on to an ERP? Like, shouldn't you like go get a, you know, Microsoft Dynamics or NetSuite or whatever? And they said something interesting to me. They said, yeah, well, you know what? We don't have a sales team. We don't have inventory. We're an R&D company. All we do is kind of purchasing. All we have to do is make sure the money we spend was spent well and then move on, and we'll keep, and eventually someone else will buy us. And for them, they had decided an ERP was not the right decision because they could buy one, but then they would leave 95% of it sort of fallow, sure. Right? Sure. So do you ever come across people that maybe shouldn't have bought one? Like they were like, oh, they wanted to fix one. It was like a hammer for a tiny nail. It was the wrong hammer for a tiny nail. Do you ever come across that situation?
Absolutely.
And how do you know whether you should buy one versus actually maybe it's not for you, you know?
Right. I guess the question that I always have for people is, how many systems are you going to need to integrate separately in order to run your business versus having a single solution that can handle the majority of those things? You notice I don't say all things. So if you have a very simple business model, so your example, if they've got purchasing, but no inventory, no manufacturing, no EDI, no website, right? So as I start layering those things on, if you have those additional complexities in your business, then looking at an ERP is smart, because you really need to start thinking about how many of these separate things am I going to need to purchase and either integrate to each other or reconcile manually to each other in order to keep track of them. I think every business owner goes through this process. So sit down and write down all of the pieces of software that you use, everything that you pay for that you use to run your business. And especially with cloud-based software, I think that list is getting longer and longer. And the question that I always have is, how many of those things are actually talking to each other versus not? Once you get to that tipping point where it's too much to keep track of because they're not talking to each other, then that's my measuring stick for ERP. Businesses that are heavy in distribution and manufacturing, that kind of stuff, I think that's an easy decision to move into ERP. Businesses that don't, think about services, right? There's plenty of service-only companies. Do they need an ERP? That's a really good question to be asking, because some of them do not. If you have a simple business process, then you don't necessarily need to have that. Now, I'm biased because not only am I a Microsoft MVP, but I've used their products for 20 years. So I always say, if you're really invested in the Microsoft stack, as far as continuity, and I feel like ease of adoption is good when you've already got people who are using the full Microsoft suite of things, and having a Microsoft ERP solution for that works well. But there are plenty of other softwares out there. If you're completely invested in Google Suite products, then maybe you're not going to want to move to a Microsoft ERP. But I have customers in almost every industry and every situation, small to large, and everybody's got their reasons for what that is. So there's a lot to consider.
Okay, so maybe you could tell me a little bit. I mean, you've had a lot of experience now, but maybe you could tell me a bit about your biggest commercial success or your biggest career success so far. If you had to pick one, what would you point to?
Yeah, I would say that if I had to choose one accomplishment, it's probably that I've helped hundreds of companies at this point to figure out how to build financial statements in ways that they never thought possible. So a lot of people think that financial statements are super simple, that every software has them, that they come out of the box, and it's no big deal. And I know that people can absolutely do things to make their financial statements sing and be able to tell the story of their financial performance through numbers with the right reporting. And I love being able to really sit down with a company and work with them on the ROI of investing some time into that. So I'll give you a quick example. I had one company that I worked with. They had 60 different companies. So they were in the oil and gas industry. And they had 5 or 6 accountants whose only job at month end was to consolidate all that information and roll it up into a finished report. And they were doing that manually, even though they had an ERP. They had an ERP system, and they would take all this information and dump it into Excel and spend days reconciling all of this information. So we showed them how to use their ERP system with using their features of consolidation. They cut that down to an 80% reduction of time and money in getting that done. And not only did they move their month-end close time from more than 2 weeks to about 2 days, but they reduced their cost of that by $200,000 to $300,000. So massive improvement for them to be able to not have that many people required to do that. And I'll tell you, not a single person lost their job. They had plenty of other work for them to do where they needed to do analysis and things that were far more value add than just adding these columns of numbers, you know, in Excel for days and days to get to their results.
My aunt did, you know, she's retired now, but she did payroll for 3,000 people every 2 weeks, right? Which would blow my mind. It was a very scary position. I mean, she's the most chill lady you'll ever meet. But she retired and she got a 2-day work job somewhere. And she went in to this company, distribution company based here in Ireland. And, you know, she was just brought in and she found this lady there that was, her job was to basically copy and paste a number from one column, you know, from one column to one row. And it was, you know, it took like 2 days a week or whatever. And that was basically her job, you know. And my aunt went in and showed her how to use a transpose, you know, like, and that was it. And she looked at her aghast and shocked and in horror, saying, well, hold on, that's my job you just did in half a second there, you know, like this is the thing, right? So I'm curious, like this, when you, do you think that's a reason actually that when people try to implement a ERP, there's a certain amount of what do you call that expression, like malicious compliance? That means that people just kind of are afraid they're going to lose their job. So they're like, well, I'm going to make sure this project doesn't go well. And and let me put it in a more controversial way. How many people have you lost their job for them? Like how many does it actually happen that way?
I'm sure there have. Because if you think about automation in general and the world in which we're in, jobs are being replaced by automation all the time. So, and I'm sure there are plenty of people that I have lost their jobs to some type of computer automation. I can't guarantee that when we say that we're going to save on headcount, right? That doesn't mean that people are going to lose their jobs. The thing that's really interesting in this last year or so is we've seen such a change in being able to find good qualified people, right? So if we think the world over, we have people retiring in larger numbers than ever before, and we don't have as many people to backfill. We don't have as many people going to college. And if we think about IT and accounting in particular, those two fields are taking a big dip in qualified people. And I used to follow the US Bureau of Statistics numbers on all this kind of stuff to see, you know, what would be the rate of accountants or IT professionals that we would need to backfill. And it's not possible to backfill that. Mm-hmm. So how do we do that now? We do that with computer automation, where we have more things like Copilot and Copilot agents that are able to automate some of those processes, and even just utilizing our systems more instead of less. And honestly, doing more value add activities, right? What's the value to that person who is typing that stuff in Excel, consolidating those numbers or moving paper around? If we can have more value add activities that are done by that computer, then we can fill that backlog of people that we need to keep our businesses running. So it's a different situation, I would say, even than 10 and certainly 20 years ago, where now using more computer automation is filling in for the lack of people that we have to keep up with company growth.
Okay, great. Now, one of the things I love to do on this podcast is, you know, we talk in the high level and with the trends and so on, but I love the red meat. I love to actually talk about a case study. And you've got a fantastic case study about a CFO who was trying to figure out why his team was taking 2 months to close the books before you got there, I should say. And tell us a bit about this. Fill in the backstory. Where was this in the world? What industry was it? Like, why? How did you get connected in with them?
Yep. So this was a publishing company in the USA. They were over 100-year-old publishing company. So they had a lot of legacy history. They had a lot of legacy employees. They had a lot of legacy paperwork. And they were really trying to modernize their company. And this CFO was somewhat new to the company. And he came in for a year or so and said, okay, I don't understand why it's taking my team, you know, about 60 days to close the books. They didn't have a complex business model, but it wasn't simple. It was kind of in the middle of the road. And I sat down with the CFO to, you know, talk through just a few things and figure out, you know, what are the, how are we going to engage on this and how can we help? And within the first hour, I figured out what the problem was, is they had over 21,000 general ledger accounts on their chart of accounts. It was mind-boggling. And the amount of complexity in that chart of accounts was just massive. But the thing that was most impactful is that every single accountant had a three-ring binder that had a paper copy of this chart of accounts. And it was about this thick, this three-ring binder. It had tons of tape flags in it. And every accountant had that on their desk, but nobody else in the company even had a chance at figuring out how to code anything correctly. So they had a huge gatekeeping problem with this giant chart of accounts that only these accountants could figure out how to code things in there. And honestly, once we dug into it, they didn't understand how to code things in there correctly either. They spent an entire week or two evaluating the stuff that came out of their system to see if it was coded correctly and fixing the errors. So they had a massive amount of time in review and in corrections for a system that they could not possibly maintain. So they were about to engage in an ERP implementation. And we said, okay, when we do this ERP implementation, we are going to reduce your chart of accounts by a massive amount. We took it down to about 300 accounts and we used dimensions. So we had things like cost centers and brands and customer segments, right? Different things with dimensions that we could use to more intuitively code where things were going, right? It wasn't account 01-810-53670-2, right? It was, that's going to office supplies for the finance department. Much easier. So,
well, I have to butt in here because I have one of my favorite guests, Ben Delacretas. He has a great expression, which he got in college about implementing an ERP. And he said his lecturer told him that implementing an ERP was like pouring concrete around your business processes. And if you had, they were inches away, it sounds like, from pouring concrete around those 3,000 codings, you know, that would have gone and lived for another 100 years probably before the software went in. Did you ever find out how they ended up with 21,000 accounts? That's nuts.
So it just devolved. So I asked them how long they had that chart of accounts and some of the history, because some of them had been there for, you know, a few decades and they could tell me the story. And they started out with, you know, pretty long chart of accounts to begin with. But every time they had a business process change, something big like acquiring other businesses or starting to use departmental accounting or starting to use project accounting, then they added on to their chart of accounts and they just kept adding more layers of complexity to it year after year and never contracting and never bringing it back and never making it more simple. So the interesting thing is that with the ERP system, they could have a nice natural account number for their base accounts and they could expand or contract with the use of dimensions. That's what Dynamics calls them, as they needed to. So I worked with them for, I want to say about a decade on and off about with different things. And we started out with maybe two or three dimensions, and then we expanded a couple, and then we took a couple back because they weren't valuable anymore. So there was some flexibility that the ERP system gave them that they didn't have with what they had before, which was incredibly static. And the there are a number of outcomes that were great, but the best outcome that came out of that was the financial reporting and really operational and managerial reporting that came out of that change in the chart of accounts, because they were able to get information, first of all, faster, right? Remember, it was taking them 60 days. Once they got their reports, there was nothing they could do to change what was happening because it had already happened. After about a year's time, they got down to closing their month end in 3 days. And they set that as a measurable goal. They just said, you know, how are we going to do this? And it took them about a year to contract all those different business processes into a much shorter time frame. It meant that they took advantage of more automation, that they did more things ahead of time. They did things in smaller increments. So things like reconciling their bank account daily instead of waiting for the end of the month to reconcile the bank account. All those things made that possible. And when they got those reports on day three, they could make a change that month based off of what they saw. So it was truly actionable change that allowed them to change behavior and change the financial results of their company. And that's the stuff that I just get excited about helping customers with, because they were able to make change in leaps and bounds. And they suddenly had people interested in the financial reports because they could actually do something about it instead of just being like, oh, well, that's nice. Let's see if we can hope to continue doing that going forward.
So how many, I'm curious, what did their income statement look like with 21,000 accounts? Like, it must have been pages and pages, just the income statement, or?
It was. So the CFO did a pretty good job of trying to summarize up all of that. He had, they were a not-for-profit company, so they were very mission-based, and he had a board that was 28 members that he needed to report to every quarter. So he did a lot of interpretive financial dance, putting all this stuff into PowerPoint slides, right, to explain to these not-for-profit folks what was happening. And none of that came out of the system. If I recall, it used to take him a good week just to put that board package together. Yeah. So, yeah. And they were not viewed very favorably, right? So the finance department was a cost center to this company. They were in no way a strategic partner. They weren't helping to change the company. You know, it's never good to be that department that everybody thinks poorly of because you're so slow. So the just how these people were viewed after a couple of years of this, where it's like, okay, go ask accounting what they think about this forward initiative we have, because they've got the data and they can get to it quickly. That was in a sea change from what it used to be, where nobody would want to go into accounting because all of it was a bunch of filing cabinets that nobody could figure out what was in them.
It always amazes me. I know it's much more common in the US to have a board of that size, like 28 or 30 or 15. You know, it's, in Europe, it's much smaller. 12 would be a big board, maybe. Yeah. And, you know, but I think everyone knows, no matter, you know, the side of effectiveness is, what's the two pizza rule? What's that Bezos used? That's probably 8 to 9 people. Yeah. So, I mean, that's an issue. I don't know why it's still happening, but it's an issue. How can you be? And in this example here, you know, that's the problem with mission-driven companies sometimes get lost with, I don't want to say job creation, but like sometimes it feels like the purpose is, oh, we're doing great, we're employing lots of people, and it's easy to forget about the true mission, which oftentimes you can't put on an income statement. So that's why it loses out, right? You know, like you say, oh, we've got so many people, we did so many things or whatever, but then the intangible is harder to report upon sometimes. But that's an amazing, if you can think of the impact, 3 months to 3 days, insane. Yeah. Imagine how much more, they're basically stuck in the mud. They couldn't do anything before.
Now at least
they could be a lot more agile.
They really had to change their thinking about what, you know, what their purpose was there and what they were accomplishing. And, you know, really just understanding that becoming more efficient was a good thing. Yeah, because there was a lot of resistance and a lot of fear of job change. I had one lady, I just have to tell you the story. She sat very quietly, you know, in a bunch of cubicles in the finance area, and nobody paid her a lot of attention. And I noticed every day I'd walk past her desk in the hallway, and she had this stack of papers that was probably up to her shoulder on the left side of her desk. And by the end of the day, it was sitting on the right-hand side of her desk up to her shoulder. And she was working very busily away. And I had no idea what was going on with the stack of papers. So my natural curiosity just got the best of me. So I sat down and talked with her and I said, hey, you know, what are you doing? What is the task here? And her job was very important. She was dealing with invoice entry for a single vendor that sent them all of, so they'd send them electronically and she'd print them all out and then she would type them all into the system. And then she would take those printed things and put them in a filing cabinet. And I asked her a few questions like, you know, who looks at those invoices and do they come up in the audit? And she didn't know, and no, they didn't come up in the audit. That's just her job that she was assigned. So I talked with the CFO. We made a single call to the vendor, and we got them to send us a data feed of all those invoices so that they could just feed into the system. And we made some rules for review so they could be processed automatically. And that eliminated her task that she did. And of course, she was fearful that her job was gone. We said, no, you've worked here for 30 years. You have a lot of knowledge about this company. We want you to evaluate this thing related to vendor performance. And she became just a rock star because she had seen all that stuff. She was absorbing a lot of the data as she went. And she became a really valuable member of that department who was doing something much more challenging and interesting than the data entry on that giant stack of paper every day.
Awesome story. I love it. I love the visualization there. This wasn't Dickensian in London we were talking about. I'm guessing this was 1990s or 20 noughts, I guess, was it?
Yeah.
So that's a fantastic story. So let's move on a little bit to, you know, your approach. You know, we all know that most people mess up their ERP implementations, right? So with this experience now, how can they avoid this? What's your strategy?
Right. So three things. I always encourage every company to make sure that they leave room in their plan for three things. The first, and these are things that are often cut, so they might be in the plan for your ERP implementations, and companies get over time and over budget, and they get pressured to deliver, and they cut these things really quickly. And I think that it's a big part of why they don't work. The first thing is training. A lot of times they'll skip training and they'll say, well, my people are fine. They're just going to pick it up and, you know, we'll do a little bit of training right before they go live and, you know, give them a little support after go live and they'll be fine. Lack of training causes user adoption failure. If people don't know how to do their job with the new stuff, if they don't understand, they're either going to create a workaround to figure out how to do it their own style, or they're going to just go back to the way they were doing it, which is probably in a spreadsheet outside of the system. So if you don't train your people, they're not going to be confident that they can do their job and they're going to fall back on some other thing so that they can be successful in doing their jobs. The second thing really is testing. That gets cut often, or people just don't take it very seriously. If you don't do the testing prior to your go live, you do not know that your system is working. And I think a lot of companies think that implementers just automatically know how to do things for their company. Implementers know how to turn the software on with the out-of-the-box features that come with the software. They don't know your business processes. They don't know your particular customer base or your items or the types of things you do. And no matter how much discovery they do with you in the beginning, they are not as invested as you are in making sure that the software works with your business processes. So your company has got to be involved with the testing and do testing more than once to make sure that when you turn everything on and you're actually doing business there, that it's going to work. And then the last thing really is, and this doesn't have to be with the implementation, this to me needs to be all the time, is you've got to have your business processes in order. If you have bad business processes now, and you put an ERP in place, it does not fix your bad business processes. So there's tons of stuff that you can do. And in fact, I was just meeting with a company last week and we had some great conversations that they had some really bad business processes and they're ready to do a big re-implementation of software they already own. They're going to get a fresh start. I said, this fresh start isn't going to do you a darn bit of good unless you fix these business processes, because you've got people doing stuff outside of the system and you've got spreadsheets, all this kind of stuff that people are using. And that money you're spending is not going to be worth it if you don't fix those processes to be prepared for this next move. So there's lots of stuff they can do today. There's lots of stuff that they could do after the implementation. And there's a few things that they'll need to wait for because they're getting new functionality. But that's by far the minority. There's so much more that they can do up front just by fixing business processes.
Okay, so I'm going to have a spicy take here, and you can chime in with your opinion, which is that, you know, the salespeople get their CRM, the marketing people get HubSpot, you know, the poor old finance people, what do they get, you know? And having an ERP implementation, ironically, is a benefit on your CV, right? It's often the thing that will get you the next role, like, hey, sure, you've done Dynamics before, we're about to roll that out, we'd like to talk to you, you know, makes a lot of sense, right? And the for that reason, and especially now when someone new comes into a new leadership role in a finance role, they're like, wow, we're just spending whatever, 200 grand on this new resource, what are they gonna do? And they're like, well, hold on, let's spend another 300 grand on software and then you'll really feel clever about it, right? So how much, have you ever seen, like, is that unfair? How much ego is involved in people wanting to just be a grown-up business and have an ERP and have all these consultants come in and bring them to lunch? And is that unfair?
Yeah, I mean, that exists out in the world. I'm a glass half full kind of person, Jabe. So I like to think that people are trying to actually get something out of it, right? Instead of just trying to, you know, love it, the grown-up business where you get to use the big kid toys. You know, of course you want the bulldozer instead of the plastic shovel in the sandbox, right? So
explain that. What's that mean?
Yeah, it's more fun to have the bulldozer with all of the big controls and the motors than sitting there in the sandbox with your plastic shovel, right? So yeah, I'm sure there's ego involved, but I think that ultimately when these are going to be successful, but the best thing that people can do up front to really decide if this is the right move for them or not is do a return on investment exercise, right? So if you are keeping your business in, let's just say spreadsheets, we're going to make it software agnostic. Yeah. How much effort does it take for you to put information into those spreadsheets and take information out of those spreadsheets to make decisions for your business or to interact with your customers and vendors? And when you think about whatever solution you're going to have, whether it's a simple accounting solution or an ERP solution, what truly is the benefit with that, right? So what is the benefit of bank integration, right? We'll pick on a common finance one. If I was able to receive electronic payments from all of my customers and pay all of my vendors electronically, which is what all businesses should be, what does that do to my cash flow? If I have the ability to be able to pay my vendors the day they are due with no additional processing time or float time for things to clear, and I can take advantage of discounts because I'm paying them on the day things are due, how much cash does that change for my company? That's a giant benefit when we can get all the way down to affecting cash. But just efficiency in general, right? If I have the ability to work with my vendors using EDI instead of having Sue processing those piles of paperwork, right? How much happier are we with the amount of accuracy that we get in the system and with the amount of speed? Are we actually increasing the ability to, I'm thinking about a customer that I was working with last week, that they're taking 6 weeks to get orders out the door. And our goal with them is to figure out how we can take that down to less than a week in the next year, you know, and what processes are not working for them that causes them to have to send things out in 6 weeks. A lot of it is upfront. It's pure procurement. They don't have the right things on the shelves because they don't have the right information in their system because they're using spreadsheets to manage the procurement side of their stuff. And their sales department is penalized because they can't get the stuff out the door. So all those things are decisions that I think are going to move you toward whether that's the right answer.
Okay, great. So I'd like to use the last section here to talk a little bit, flip the script or break the fourth wall and talk about your own success as developing a practice, because you've sort of built it in a slightly unusual way, I would say. So could you tell us a bit about this, you know, the size and scope of your practice that you built and how you built it? Because you had an interesting story there.
Yeah. I would say that when we started, my co-founder and I and the other people we were working with had started as end users of the software, and we'd also worked for Microsoft partners. So we had that dual perspective of what it is like on both sides of ERP software. And it started from a point of frustration where we just said, We have our customers call us every day asking for help in figuring out, how do I do this new thing? And the new thing could be, you know, maybe I'm bringing in a new company, or I'm starting a new product, or maybe I just know that I've got a process that needs to change. And the Microsoft partners didn't have the time or the staff with the qualifications to answer those kind of questions. And, you know, here we were working for these Microsoft partners, and we're like, well, we know how to answer those questions. Why can't we spend time on it? And from a business standpoint, it totally makes sense. Those implementation partners who are selling you software, their business model is to do implementations. So sell you software licenses, put it in place in a certain time period, and then get out. And they're not doing a whole lot of things with support and continued improvement and that kind of thing. And there wasn't anybody doing that. So that's really the kernel of what started things with our business, and expanding fractional services as part of that became just a natural outcropping from that. We had plenty of people who needed training, that we had plenty of people who needed management consulting, but at some point in the lifetime of their company, they would have a CFO that would leave, or an accounts payable turnover problem. And they would call us and they'd say, who do you know? And we'd say, well, you know us. What can we help you with? So we've done a lot of fractional work with fractional CIOs, helping with IT stuff, with fractional CFOs and controllers, and even going all the way down to AP and AR clerks and bookkeepers. Just being able to help companies because we have this specific expertise in this ERP software. And that's really the angle for us, is that we've got so much experience and, you know, professional time built in understanding this software from the beginning to the end, that when people call us for fractional services, our goal is to help them with their current situation, get them restaffed, and for us to move on. And while we're there, then we're helping them to improve processes and do those kind of things, so that we're always handing things off in a better state than when we started.
When you say it makes so much sense. Like, on the one hand, you have people who run a business, right? That makes sense. So they're doing the thing, they're doing the do. The other hand, you have people who are selling software, but it's a distinct and unique skill set, which is changing the process to achieve the business outcome. Now, I know if you run a business, you should be able to do that, but that's not necessarily why you were hired, or not necessarily what you're brilliant at, you know, like it's a different sort of mindset, you know. Somebody want to, you know, hiring someone to drive the train is different to the one to, you know, whatever, design it, I guess. Yeah. So, and I can see why you've been successful with it. So who should get in touch with you, Kerry, and how can they do that?
Yeah, I would say anybody who is looking to figure out how to improve their business processes is somebody who should get in touch with us. So we work mostly with customers who use Microsoft Dynamics 365 Business Central. That's really our niche. Mm-hmm. But we've worked with companies who don't as well, where they just say, okay, we just need help evaluating our business processes and understanding how we can improve. There's something that we do, which is just a business process assessment. And depending on the scope of the project, we'll sit down with a company and figure out, you know, what are the recommended things that you could do now to improve? And we break it down into a couple of different things. Where are there things where we can see that you need training? Where are there things where you could do this yourself? And here's your plan for the things that you could do yourself. And where do you need maybe some additional help, either with more consulting for a deeper problem, or maybe you need some kind of an add-on or a different software, and you need to start evaluating what that looks like for your business. So there's business process is not that much different business to business, industry to industry, and even software to software. And helping people to understand how that business process works is where we've been really successful, and we love to help companies with that.
Okay, so Kerry has a beautiful website, getyournewview.com, getyournewview.com, how to say what I said, and they have a great testimonial section with videos. So I recommend you go there, have a look at the testimonials, hear it from the horse's mouth. I love it when people have videos and testimonials, because who knows whether those other ones are real, right? So that's awesome. Thank you very much for being on the show, Kerry. And thank you for listening this far into the show. Your special reward for being a dedicated listener is to be able to go to grossprofitpodcast.com. That's grossprofitpodcast.com/events. If you're a fractional CFO, we hold monthly mastermind sessions. What's a mastermind? You bring your business problems as a fractional CFO. We put you in a group of three or four other fractional CFOs. It's a great way for networking. And then you get some feedback from your peers. So it's a big success, whether you're 1 year or 30 years in business, you can get something out of it. And we try and put people in the right cohorts there. So that's your special reward. You get to sign up for that this week. So, and that's it. Thanks, Kerry. It's been fun.
Yeah, absolutely a pleasure to be here, James. Thanks for inviting me.